United Nations Secretary General Ban Ki-moon this week accepted Palestine's bid to join the International Criminal Court effective April 1st. That means Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas may get his wish of trying Israel for war crimes. But it will cost him in the short run. Israel has frozen the transfer of more than $100 million in tax funds collected on the Palestinians' behalf. Joining us now is Ambassador Dennis Ross, a counselor at the Washington Institute for Near East Policy. He was the U.S. chief negotiator for Arab-Israeli issues from 1993 to 2001. Ambassador, welcome to The Takeaway.
Nice to be with you. Thank you.
Could you lay out your argument for why you think this is a mistake on the part of Mahmoud Abbas and particularly Ban Ki-moon?
Well, my main concern is the following. The Palestinians have had a history of focusing on symbols rather than substance. Is this a vehicle for putting pressure on Israel? The answer is yes. Is this a vehicle for changing anything on the ground? The answer is no. If the purpose is to try to move towards a two-state outcome, this isn't going to make it more likely. If the purpose is to try to isolate the Israelis, it can do that. So the question becomes, what is your aim? Is your aim to try to produce two states? And if your aim is that, then when there are negotiations or when there are even efforts in the Security Council or the UN, if those efforts are balanced where the needs of both sides are met, then this is something that you could say, all right, that's going to advance the cause of two states and peace between Israelis and Palestinians. If the effort doesn't lend itself towards that, then really it's geared more towards symbols and making statements than it is towards changing the realities and producing an outcome that would actually serve Palestinian interests as regards to statehood.
Why do you think these are mutually exclusive? Can't the question of Israeli tactics in the conflict, and even Palestinian tactics for that matter, proceed as well as a diplomatic solution that would involve a two-state settlement?
Well, in theory, yes. In theory, yes. Although pushing for this at this point, at a time when you have an Israeli election, is clearly something that is designed to affect things in Israel in a way that is not going to serve your broader purpose. If your purpose, again, is to hope that the extreme takes over in Israel so that, again, that makes it easier to polarize, that's one thing. But if your purpose is to deal with an Israel where you demonstrate, look, we have needs, we have interests, Israel needs to address those, we also recognize that we're not going to achieve what we want unless, in fact, the Israelis achieve what they want and need as well. I mean, ultimately, what this is about is how do you address the needs of both sides, not how do you address the wants or needs of one side.
But from Mahmoud Abbas's perspective, Netanyahu can't even get a settlement freeze through his own parliament without his government falling. What likelihood is there that Israel would get any more right wing from Mahmoud Abbas's perspective than it is already?
Well, look, it's a fair point to say that he can't get a settlement freeze through, but it also ignores a certain interesting fact. You had a process going for 9 months last year. At the time that that process was still being worked by the Secretary of State, Mahmoud Abbas chose to accede to 15 international organizations at a time when, in fact, the package was still being worked that would have addressed Palestinian needs actually on prisoner releases and even on, in fact, a limitation on settlement activity, if not a freeze on settlement activity. And at that point, Mahmoud Abbas chose to move in a direction that he knew was likely to undo that package, but he made that move anyway. Now, it's not that I believe that Mahmoud Abbas is against the idea of peace in principle with the Israelis, nor do I think that, in fact, he is someone who is in favor of violence. He clearly is not. Those are actually what I would say are attributes in his favor. But it's also pretty clear at this point that he's looking at a Palestinian population that he sees as so angry at Israel that basically the very idea of any kind of compromise is something that is unacceptable. Therefore, negotiations are not a very effective vehicle for him because that would require something on his part as well, whereas going the international route requires very little on his part. It certainly engenders a response from the Israelis and a response from the United States, which may well mean a cutoff of monies. But from a symbolic standpoint, from the image of looking like he's standing up to Israel, and even from the image of standing up to the United States, which Mahmoud Abbas now proclaims rather proudly that he's said no to the United States something like 12 or 13 times. And this is designed to suggest to his population, look, I'm defying. Well, part of the problem with the Palestinian national movement has been that historically, defiance has been kind of the most desired kind of attribute, and defiance is one thing, but it doesn't produce ultimately what you're looking for.
The U.S. and Israel are not signatories of the International Criminal Court, yet what would your argument be against the accusation that Israel has committed war crimes if it should ever get to that point?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I mean, you have to compare what goes on internationally, obviously. You know, what is the definition of a war crime? You know, obviously, typically, the definition of a war crime involves crimes against humanity. The Israelis have engaged in acts of self-defense. When you have rockets fired at your civilian population and the Israelis seek to take out those rockets, and those rockets are embedded in a civilian population, inevitably and tragically it produces civilian casualties, which is terrible. Does that rise to a crime against humanity? I think it's pretty hard to say that meets that standard.
In the ICC, though, would you think that's a solid and powerful defense?
I think it is a significant defense. And also, look, the ICC is dealing with other realities around the globe. We have 200,000 people at least killed in Syria. You know, you have 10 million people displaced. You look at the Congo and you look at the numbers of people that have been killed, and they are in the numbers are just horrific. As terrible as it was to see a conflict in Gaza where 2,000 people were killed, and I hate to put it in terms of numbers this way, but these numbers pale in comparison to what we're seeing elsewhere around the globe, and those are not being brought to the ICC. And the ICC itself has succeeded in prosecutions, I think, only three times. So the prosecutor of the ICC will want to ensure that there's some prospect of success. All these will factor into any ICC decision, not to mention that the Israelis and others will bring counterclaims against the Palestinians, which means what the Palestinians may do when it comes to the ICC is look like they're taking a step that is putting a great deal of pressure on Israel, but it's likely to produce nothing on the ground, and that's why I say it's much more of a symbolic move than a practical move for the Palestinians.
Well, we'll see if a conversation like this actually materializes. It would certainly take the whole conflict in a different direction. Ambassador Dennis Ross, thanks so much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Ambassador Dennis Ross is a counselor at the Washington Institute for Near East Studies. He was UE's chief negotiator for Arab-Israeli issues from 1993 to 2001.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.